Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Economics Design Podcast. My name is Ari Kimmelman. I'm a research analyst with Economics Design. And today I'm joined once again by my colleagues, Kiefer Zhang and Gio Populo, to discuss a hot topic in the Web3 space, NFT royalties. It's great to have you two here today. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we begin, I'll give a quick overview of what's been happening around NFT royalties. So for NFT projects, one of the main sources of revenue, in addition to the initial sales, are royalties, otherwise known as secondary marketplace fees. And what this means is every time an NFT is bought and sold, a percentage of the sale goes toward the person or wallet who created the NFT through smart contracts. Now, one issue here is you want to encourage people within a community to hold onto NFTs, but this directly conflicts with the idea of having a main source of revenue that is dependent on people selling those NFTs. So a different approach is that some projects are taking is basically selling NFTs at a low price and trying to have them increase in value over time, relying more heavily on those secondary market fees as a means of generating revenue. So what's currently happening is some projects are setting their royalty fees to 0%, but the marketplaces are still taking a cut by basically taking advantage of a function of a smart contract that's not the intended purpose of that function. So the overarching questions here are, what should NFT royalties be set to, and should they even exist in the first place? Gio and Kiefer, is there anything you want to add to that explanation?
Yeah, so I think it's really important to look at the concept that you touched on of having a misalignment between the monetization strategy and the underlying incentives here. And so if you have the goal of having users be actively trading that asset and selling that asset, that comes into conflict with the fundamental goal of wanting people to be to hold and be active in the community. There's very opposite actions. And when your revenue strategy becomes heavily reliant on one of the sides there, the trading, the incentives are misaligned here. But then it depends on the context. If you have very much a club context, obviously like Bored Ape Yacht Club is the biggest reference point here, where it's really a membership strategy. It's about holding this asset in order to get access to some kind of special perks. If the expectation is the revenue comes from people selling or leaving the club, it's not very aligned. Normally club membership models in any other context are based on some sort of subscription fee for being in order to get that kind of benefit. If you need to pay something on an ongoing basis, rather than people paying just purely for trading or essentially leaving. But I think that's really about giving the tools to teams to monetize in a way that fits them. And so projects are going to be very different in different contexts. Not all of them have fundamentally a club model. And we can get into that a little bit later of what kind of models this makes sense in. But I believe they should be given the tools, but then it's also on the creators to better understand in what cases this is actually going to be a relevant strategy.
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting that you mentioned that like every project is different. And I think that something that we're missing in most projects is like the actual value. So what is the value that you're adding to your holders? And NFT began with like the community value of it. And there is definitely a community value for it in communities that are well structured and they're actually designed for that purpose. But we see that there are just too many NFT projects to have value for every community, right? There are like more communities and more NFT projects than people actually participating in this. So new projects must find like new ways to actually add value, and that's how they're gonna monetize. So they're gonna have their NFTs as like a plus, or as you said, like a membership, but the real value will come from like services or things that they can give that people want, and they're gonna pay for it. And then this badge is just something that gives them access to that kind of thing. But as you said, like it's a very it's very complex or even like contradictory if you put an incentive for you to sell at the same time that you want them to hold, because that's your monetization strategy. Excuse me. And I think that the subsector, or like the kind of projects that suffer the most, are like pure art. So for these guys who are using Web3 and NFTs as like a new way for them to sell their actual art, they don't have a product other than the art. So royalties could make sense for them, because that's the only way for them to monetize on the long term from the work that they've done in the past. So I think for pure artists, this is something different. But when we're talking about most NFT projects who want to become a company per se, then I think it's a different story. Maybe we have incentives that must be fixed, and let's see what happens in the future.
Great. So thank you too for adding on to those points. There are a variety of discussions within the realm of NFT projects, but there are three topics in particular I would like to discuss today. So the first one being, which context do royalties actually make sense as a successful business model? The second topic being, what other ways of generating revenue for NFT projects exist? And finally, how do marketplace fees tie back to specifically the blockchain gaming space? So Kiefer and Gio, would one of you like to share your thoughts on which context this royalty model makes the most sense?
Yeah, so the general direction I think it makes sense in at a high level before going down is in context where you're trying to incentivize trade. You can think of this as a split between trading versus holding. And so far, what we've seen in the majority of NFT implementations has been somewhat of a holding strategy. I mentioned like essentially club membership I'll leave it at that. But then the alternative context on this could be a reference point could be, think about MMOs. You have this complex economy where you are really pushing people to transact with each other. There's different components that are specifically designed for this, like having a large variety of ways in which people can collect resources, can craft and combine those resources into different intermediary components and onwards until you have some sort of end product. So you're not going directly to having some end product that someone holds and uses, but you're really creating something where there's going to be a lot of activity and specialization of different people doing different, focusing on different things, and then trading amongst each other. And so in this model, then you really do have a high trading volume of assets. And so given that, you're able to better monetize through a royalty setting because you're getting that high volume calling this just a high trade incentive versus much more of a holding incentive.
Yeah. I think for MMOs, it really makes sense. And then if we shift out to games, again, I still hold my opinion. I think pure art is like the category for NFTs when we're thinking of like all of the famous ones like Basie or like Mutants or Doodles. I think these are like projects that are moving towards a company, and people expect products from them. People expect them to deliver things, and that's how they're going to monetize. I'm sure when they raised money from the VCs, they didn't present their revenue streams as only royalties, because that would be like a very weak thesis. So they have expectations of future revenue coming from outside and not from people leaving. But for artists, again, maybe you can have some services like, okay, you buy my NFT, and if you pay this plus, I'll send you a physical copy, or I'll send you a signed copy, or you have this like, you can go to an event or something like that. But there's not really much else other than the art, which is the main, it's the center. For projects that it's a membership, it's access, it's like access to a tool, for example, NFT tools that you buy an NFT, that's where your value is coming from. So I think that like for pure art, it makes sense to have royalties, but for other projects, I think the revenue streams should come from somewhere else.
Yeah, kind of building off that, just people using NFTs as a replacement for a subscription model I think can be something that's a little bit problematic. And it does depend on the implementation, because fundamentally from like a finance perspective, it's about like a lump sum payment versus a continuous flow of payments for some given service. And so it's just going to depend on the pricing you set for that initial lump sum NFT purchase and how you discount future payments. But that is something that I think should have more effort put into the planning of that, because that really is something you should look at from a very much a finance discounted cash flow perspective, rather than just, we're just going to take this as our new monetization model without thinking about how we're going to potentially cover future costs down the line or really allocate this initial lump sum of revenue that we're getting.
Yeah, and this is funny because it's super counterintuitive, right? So like, if your service is very good, you won't have revenue, because your revenue comes from people selling and buying. So like, the better your service is, the less people are going to want to sell them, the less money you're going to make. So it's kind of like counterintuitive, and in terms of incentives and what you want to deliver, it just like doesn't fit very well. I agree with you.
I think the point about raising capital on the VC side of things and not having essentially these royalty fees as a mean of generating revenue, right? I think this is a very important idea that a lot of projects haven't yet instilled into their process of developing the project. And I think that's a really take-home point from that point that you made there, Gio and Kiefer. I want to move on to a different question for today, which is, if we could briefly discuss some alternative ways of generating revenue for these NFT projects.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can start on that one. I wrote an article on it, and there I proposed a couple of like solutions, including one of Kiefer's solution for a different article that he wrote. So I'll let him speak a little bit on that one. But yeah, you have a couple of things that you can do like immediately, such as like controlling who does and who doesn't pay royalties. So let's say like you have perks for your NFTs and you have access, you could somehow like trace what's happening in the blockchain and know who's paying and who is not paying royalties. So it would be kind of like blacklisting whoever sold the NFT with zero royalties. But the point is that this is not a very good solution, because you're penalizing the buyer as well, right? So the buyer who is willing to pay full price is getting penalized his access because someone else sold it for zero royalty. So it would be kind of hard to really enforce it. And a couple of other options that people could do is kind of try to estimate what is the royalty revenue that they expect or that they need. So if royalties is what gonna keep them for the first, let's say, 2 or 3 months of the project, how much is that expected? And then add that to your NFT mint price. Of course, this is a barrier to entry, but it's a way of like immediately bringing that and closing the math on your financials. And you could also go to like different places that really enforce. So I know that Immutable X, if I'm not mistaken, announced that royalties are enforceable at their protocol, like at the protocol level. So if a creator really needs that and thinks that it doesn't really change if they release in a different place, other than the just main ones and most famous, then I think it's also an immediate solution for it. You just go for somewhere that is enforceable on a protocol level. And the one that I think it's like the most interesting one is to like introduce periodical taxes for holders. And that's what I was mentioning in Kiefer's article. If you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I can hop in on that. And so the concept that I proposed there is around what I'm calling a bid-based land value tax. As a general goal with this, we're trying to enforce or trying to create ongoing costs or ongoing taxes for ownership. So you're charging people for owning an asset rather than for selling or purchasing an asset. Generally with this kind of strategy, you are getting looking at how much people are bidding or willing to pay for a particular asset. If you think of it as like metaverse land, fundamentally we're looking at the land, not any improvements on it. So not like a house or anything you're building on it. And so fundamentally, what are people willing to pay for the base asset? And then using that as a valuation and taxing that. And so now you're getting a cash flow to the DAO. So the DAO is getting funded based on the holders. So the people who are actually getting value from it are the people who are paying at the same time. So this is much better incentive alignment versus what we're talking about with the royalty model. Then as last component of this, we're also kind of incentivizing buy-side liquidity for these assets by taking a portion of that revenue and paying that out as incentives to people who are creating these bids.
Yeah, and I think it ties really well with the point that you made previously on the regarding membership. So that just having an NFT is not a very good thing because you get a lump sum. But if you could charge someone for keeping their NFT, for holding, and if you make the right calculations, this could be your membership, right? So you could have a tax that is recurrent and that you make, I don't know, let's say like 10%. And if that is enough for your membership, and if you plan enough, then maybe this is something that could work, right? And it could be fair. If you say like, hey, my membership is 10% or 20% of the value of the access pass, then it's on your end to really bring value to that and to increase that and to receive higher membership. So then incentives are like much more aligned. So I think that this concept can be like very useful, and I haven't seen many projects apply.
Yeah, and it also has benefits towards getting the participants or the NFT owners to actually be active and not just have not just be passive speculators, because that's a huge issue we see with NFT markets right now. People are just seeing, I'll buy this thing, I'll buy the lump sum and then sit on it and hope that that other people help make this a good community or game or whatever the project is. But then if you are putting an ongoing cost onto that activity, then it's going to select for the people who actually are getting value from it and putting value into it and putting effort into it. And so that's going to have better aligned incentives for a funded and active community.
Mm-hmm. I think there are some excellent points there made by both of you. And honestly, some excellent solutions. Kiefer, thanks for pointing out some of those points there that projects I'm sure will be enforcing and using over the next couple of years. And I'm excited to see those ideas implemented. I would like to move the conversation a little bit away currently from the context of NFT projects and move a little bit towards the gaming space. So my general impression is that relying on royalties is going to be essentially an inferior way of generating revenue compared to simply selling in-game assets outright. That's my personal opinion. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this point, and perhaps if you guys disagree with this idea.
Some of the pushback on monetization, kind of that perspective, comes from the idea that there will be, that when there's the ability to resell these assets, that there would be some cannibalization of primary market purchases. So if someone has the ability to buy this particular weapon from somebody else, say some sword in a game, they can buy it from somebody else rather than the publisher, that even though the game studio would be getting revenue from that secondary market fee, they would be losing out on the primary market fee. That potentially could happen. But I also want to bring in a potential area where that could be counteracted in terms of revenue. And this is from having the potential to have a higher number of transactions and much more complex and economic transactions here. And I really think of adding in the Web3 component to gaming as adding in a really fundamental economic building block. You're enabling a time versus money trade-off to happen, but not only controlled by the game studio. You're allowing that to be a fundamental building block that can be leveraged by anyone in that game economy. So you could now have a situation where going back to like kind of the MMO example of, or you can have this in a lot of different contexts, but where there's maybe a supply chain of an asset. So if you have some sword in the game, but there's a complex crafting process for it, where you have to collect materials have some skills in the crafting process. Maybe you need to move resources from one area of the map to another one, and that's a whole process. And so it's not just about there being a trade for that end asset, but there's also a large number of steps to potentially create the assets before they're ever purchased by an end user. And that end user is providing the revenue inflow into and funding this whole process and supply chain. That's creating economic opportunities for other people with certain skill sets to participate in being really good at mining resources, having specific crafting skills, maybe even being a fighter that can protect people on the road while they're moving these things. And so it's creating economic opportunity for a large number of people to do all of these other tasks. And in the process, these specialized people are making trades. They're trading resources for forging resources into other things, trading components for the sword, having maybe some sort of bounty or work contract for hiring protection along the road here. And so you're creating all these other types of economic interactions that previously you didn't have a good method of monetizing, but you've created this time for money building block that is going to create so many more types of interactions and transactions that can be monetized through that secondary market revenue. And it's all of these that could add up to potentially create an overall net increase in revenue.
Yeah, and I think this idea that you said like really makes the game like a lot more engaging. So it's like, it's not professions or skills that you set up, but are things that like naturally appear because of the way that your economic incentives and all that is built. So I think it's like very interesting to have that kind of thinking as well. And one thing that I wanted to point out on the selling directly from the publisher is that, like, of course, it has a big concern that affects like scarcity, right? So like, if you have like a legendary item that should be very hard and you could just purchase as many as you want from a shop, the value of this item is gonna like decrease significantly over time. And then you have to weigh this on your game economy, if it makes sense. If a legendary item is accessible for a player level one, does that break your game? Like, is that okay for you? Or do you need limitations on that? So I think like a lot of new things arise from that, that could be negative points. And also, I think royalties could still be enforced, but maybe something else should be done with it. So let's say if like you still had royalties, but instead of going to the game publisher, because they already have the revenue channels set, what if it went to like a tournament bucket, let's say? People would just love to pay royalties because they would see that growing, and like the speculation would add to this like end of the month World Cup that they would do. So I think like you could still use that, but in more productive ways.
Interesting. I would like to transition the conversation a little bit away and present a new idea, which would be changing the royalty fee from 5 to 10%, maybe to something like 20 to 40%. It's an idea I heard circulating. And the idea here being discourage people from trading NFTs and really encourage people who are dedicated towards the success of a project to participate. So I'm wondering if you two have any thoughts on this point and whether you see it as something that might come to fruition.
Yeah, I'll hop in on this. And so here it's good to go back again to what is your fundamental goal that you want to achieve here? Going back to first principles before you're designing any sort of mechanism here. And so that's looking at, do you want people to hold your NFT or do you want them to trade? And so if your goal really is to get people to hold that NFT, then you can use the fees as a lever to influence the activity of people in your community. And so there is definitely an inverse relationship between the fees that you're setting and trading activity. So that's something that you can pull, and increasing those fees can definitely help you with decreasing the number of trades happening. But then also there's kind of an interesting component of what will the impact be on your net revenue? This is something where it's not a super clear what the actual impact could be. Because on the one hand, you're getting more revenue per trade, but there's also going to be an impact on the number of trades that are going to happen at a certain level of fee that you set. And so this is something that it's going to depend on how elastic the demand is for these assets given a change in price. And so it's not necessarily clear, but you should understand that at a certain point, even increasing the fees might actually have a decrease on your net revenue there.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting that you mentioned that, like, maybe you want people to trade, because a lot of times people think of speculation as like a bad thing necessarily, but it's not really necessarily a bad thing. Maybe you want speculators in your ecosystem. Speculators maybe add volume. They can add like activity, bring more eyes to your project. So you have to like kind of wait it out if it's beneficial or if it's gonna hurt the other points of your project, right? And I think that there was this one statistics that I can't remember exactly, but I think that from the NFTs, so I'm not putting gaming here, but NFTs, I think 80% of the market is in PFPs. So it's not really like utility NFTs, but more of like community like projects. So I think these projects are very heavily dependent on momentum. So I think whenever you put a very high fee, like a 20 or 30%, you cut out the speculators that buy from 0.01 ETH to sell it for 0.011, right? The people who want just peanuts, because now they need at least a 20 to 30% upside to break even. So if this momentum is something that is needed for you, for your project, maybe this could be a deal breaker. So it's also to consider.
I think that highlights both the advantages and disadvantages there to that question. I would like to ask about a different idea, which is the idea of associating a token with an NFT project. So I'm wondering if you two could share your thoughts on this point and whether it might be a good idea or a not so good idea.
Yeah, I think so. It's an interesting point because a lot of people think that just creating a token, it adds value to your ecosystem as a whole, but it really depends. I think the biggest point for me that goes against this idea is that now that you have a token and an NFT, you have two different types of people who hold different things, and you have to serve them still a lot of value for them to stay. So if your NFT doesn't deliver value on its own already, releasing a token would make it even worse. So I think there is this point in like conflict of interest between token holders and NFT holders. But yeah, if the project has something outside of the art, outside of the access, and they need a currency to be value accrual or to be a mean of payment, then maybe.
Yeah, I agree. In a lot of cases, it can be something that cannibalizes the utility of the NFT. Because especially a lot of, when we're talking about PFP projects, there's realistically not a whole lot of value there other than having a community. And that community, and so it kind of the goal of these projects really is not like monetizing a particular service. It's really just about trying to keep that community there. And yeah, I have a little bit of a negative perception of a lot of these kind of PFP style projects in the space. And I think it's actually a little bit of a weird dynamic for some of these that have like really no core value proposition other than that community, and that their best strategy is really just do everything they can to maintain activity and community for a little bit longer. In some of those cases, having a token could be the thing that prevents them from just kind of dying off, and keeping people engaged for a little bit longer. Does not mean that token is a good investment. It's probably a terrible investment, and it might not, and given the conflict with the NFT utility, it might not help them in the long term. But for some of these projects, if they don't do anything to get continued interest, they might not be along for much longer anyway. And so for some cases with very low value of any core product, it might be beneficial for them. But if we start to think about products that have a little bit better value proposition, there can definitely be good uses for having a token. But you want to think about fundamentally, why do you? If it's just to raise money, there are a variety of ways to raise money, and you want to make sure that this is something that's actually going to be valuable in your ecosystem. Gio kind of mentioned this, but there are kind of directions you can go with this on it being a medium of exchange or it being something that's meant to accrue value. So something like more like equity. So currency versus equity like split. And so if we're talking about like a PFP NFT project, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of things to that need its own currency. We're not talking about a very complex economy. And so if it's just, if there's the expectation that people are going to be spending with this, I don't think there's a whole lot of reason to have that. Like if they're just buying merch with it, that's not a whole lot of demand that justifies having a currency. If it's something that's meant to accrue value, if they do have some sort of value proposition, even just a community, and they can, and they do find creative ways to monetize that well, they can have value accrue to a token. But again, this goes back to, now that's a trade-off between value that can go to the NFT holders versus the token holders. So very, want to think very carefully about, is this really going to add enough value based on this particular strategy to justify that cannibalization?
And I think perhaps like a contrary perspective is, why do I need a currency when I can just use a different cryptocurrency? And then, like you said, have all that value goes towards the NFT project. I think that's probably an important consideration for most projects who have real value being created and are considering implementing a cryptocurrency to support their growth.
Yeah, I am in favor of more complex economies, especially when we're talking about games with NFTs, having their own currency as, and I mean this as a medium of exchange, not something that you sell to investors or is meant to grow in value over time, just because you have the benefit of inflation as a tool that can help kickstart growth. Versus if you would use a separate currency like a stablecoin or Ethereum, all these outflows have to be fully funded, and so you have less flexibility in your growth and monetary policy there.
Got it. So last question for today, I would like to discuss a recent article I read on CoinDesk, I believe, and it was titled "OpenSea Launches First Royalty Enforcement Tool Amid NFT Marketplace Drama." Gio, this is an article that you had sent me a couple of days ago. I'm wondering if you could share some information and your opinion on this tool.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that marketplaces war has been like very relevant in the past couple of weeks because of that. So of course, like a lot of things started in Solana, in which like PseudoSwap put the optionality to pay for royalties. And then like Magic Eden was kind of forced to do it because they lost a lot of the market share. And then this kind of like started flowing to the Ethereum ecosystem as well, in which people were thinking like, hey, is OpenSea gonna do that? Is LooksRare gonna do that? And then we started seeing this as well. So X2, Y2, Blur.io, LooksRare, all following the same trend. But of course, like for artists and for projects who rely on that, this was a big drama. So there was this like whole discussion on what OpenSea was gonna do, because of course they detain like the majority of the market share still, even though they lost a lot for these marketplaces because of the traders. They're still like the main place that people go to see what's relevant and all that. So what OpenSea basically did was develop a tool that can blacklist marketplaces that don't enforce royalties for collections that actually deploy that. So if you want, you can make your NFT only be tradable in a specific marketplaces that can enforce. So like OpenSea is an example as of now, is obvious. And I believe they're gonna update that list of blacklisted marketplaces as time goes on and like more things comes in. I think it's like pretty interesting, but at the same time, it has risks for the projects, right? So a couple months ago, before all of this happened, there was a lot of talk about OpenSea not being able to unflag NFTs, and that collections were being like removed from OpenSea without like any potential reason. So this kind of thing really concentrates power in the hands of few. So if they do, pretty much 100% of the volume of these collections are going to be in OpenSea, because that's where the liquidity is going to be. There will be no advantage of trading in a different marketplace. So you're kind of like creating a dependency on a marketplace. You're centralizing this market. So I think it is, again, one of the immediate solutions that you can do. It's like, okay, enforce it, blacklist whoever doesn't. And that's pretty much what they're doing, but in a better way, of putting it like on the beginning of the collection. So you deploy a contract that makes that and not just like track whoever did it and penalize those. But there are consequences to that. And I think especially the overdependence in a couple of names of the market.
Yeah, there is a bit of risk there of centralization and monopoly power by OpenSea as it helps them try to get back some of the market share that they lost to those other market entrants. But I do think that this is a really useful tool, and I'm all for giving the creators a choice. And I think a lot of what we discussed today is in terms of how creators should be strategizing their monetization strategy. Yeah, I don't think it should be up to the exchanges. I think we should give the power to the creators, let them make choices. I think a lot of them need to make better choices, but it's still up to them and ideally their community as well, and have conversations and decisions with the DAO to understand how this should be monetizing going forward. And then let them compete with all these tools at their disposal to see which ones eventually will be successful.
All right. Well, with that said, I would like to conclude the podcast for today. Thank you, too, for joining me. It was great to have you here today.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
To our listeners out there, if you like this video, please consider subscribing and following us on Spotify and YouTube for more discussions like this. Thanks, everyone.